Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
All right, big 11 o'clock hour. It's going to be a big hour. I mean, I don't know if you guys have really wrapped your arms around the magnitude of this. Mike Ozanian from Forbes is going to join us in about 12 minutes. There's a big soundbite from Buster Olney. He was on with Chris Carlin last night. We'll hear that in a couple of moments as well. Get to the calls. I mean, this is going to be a big hour, leading us into maybe a bigger hour in the noon hour, where we have Cuddle Marry Trash, which is the name that I'm told it is at the moment. And then, of course, observations at 12:30. Right? Nothing has changed since yesterday at about 12:30.
Absolutely nothing. I haven't got any phone calls one way or the other. So far, so good.
So Cuddle fine, Marry fine, Trash fine, the sound we play fine, the segment fine. It will continue again at least one more day.
At least one more day, yeah. We'll get into the today we're going to go NFC West.
NFC West. That's a good
NFC
division.
NFC West today.
I know Canty loves the Seahawks.
Love the Seahawks, Dave.
Right?
Love them.
They're good football.
Because I love their quarterback. They got
terrific.
I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the game. I think Russell Wilson, in my opinion, is clearly number two.
Yeah, he's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Who did you try to like slip in there during the segment the other day? Is this guy the best quarterback in the NFL? We became Aaron Rodgers. It's gross.
I said that will Aaron Rodgers reassert himself? Everyone's talking. I mean, don't act like you haven't heard the conversation.
Oh, come on.
Because they drafted
Jordan Love.
You've
heard conversation. Will Aaron Rodgers reassert himself as the best quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Come on.
No, I don't think there's anything. I would put it this way. The way that Pat Mahomes is trending, I really don't think that Aaron Rodgers is capable of accomplishing enough in order to supplant Pat Mahomes. I just don't see that happening.
What happens if Pat Mahomes gets better?
Well, I think that's what everybody believes, right? He will improve. In his first full season as a starter, he threw 50 touchdowns, won MVP. Second full season as a starter, wins a Super Bowl?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
without knowing how to read defenses, too, by the way.
But that's my point, though, guys. I mean, listen, he's only 3 years into his NFL career. To think that he's as good as he's ever going to be is foolish. He's going to get better. But I think we're actually about to usher in a whole new level, a whole new generation of quarterbacking. I think we're actually going to see better quarterback play than we've seen in the National Football League in decades prior.
Well, when you look around the NFL, how many teams do you look at and say they just don't have a quarterback? Not a lot.
Not a lot of teams, Dave, and I think that can be attributed to the way the game is played at the lower levels of sport. I mean, high school offenses back when I was playing, they were wing T offenses. They were option run heavy offenses. Now kids are running spread offenses, you know, in high school. JV teams. I mean, that's what you're seeing. They're throwing the ball all around the yard. And so I think that you're starting to see improved quarterback play and better quarterbacks because they're passing the ball more at the lower levels of sport. I'm excited about it, man. I mean,
listen,
Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, this is a whole new wave, Dave. And the NFL has proven that their business model, you know, when you protect the quarterback and you keep them on the field, that's great for the game. And that's great for the team's bottom lines.
Yep.
Quarterbacks are the star in the NFL.
Yep, and that's why you can't touch the quarterback.
Exactly.
100%. All right, so do you want to hear this really, really strong soundbite from Buster Olney, or do you want to take a couple calls, then hear it, and then get to our guest? You guys tell me what works best for you.
I would prefer a couple calls, Buster sound, and then we hit a break so we can, or I don't even know if we have to hit a break, but then we get the guest, which I'm really excited about on.
Well, I think we're going to have him in this segment.
Oh, perfect. So
yeah, I would say Buster. Let's go calls first, then we hear sound from Buster, transition to sports business.
Okay. I like the way that you're all thinking, and I'm on the same page. If I can just actually get the call screener to work here, that would be wonderful. And now I do. Now, and there we go. And it's the honesty of live radio. Let's go to Pete in New Hampshire. Pete, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. What's happening? Hope you guys are doing well.
You're doing good, Pete.
Thanks a lot for the Super Bowl. I was never a big basketball fan. I was more Rangers, Yankees, and Giants, but I did go to a Bulls game with, against the Knicks in the early 90s. My question is, I watched the whole special. I thought it was really good. I didn't see them following anybody around besides Jordan. So, of course, most of it's all going to be about him. So I don't see how you can criticize him for what he did.
Well, but they got in depth with Steve Kerr and they did stuff with Pippen. I don't think that's fair. If Jordan wanted it to go in a different direction, it would have gone in a different direction.
Well, obviously, but he's the one who controlled. I guess I thought it was supposed to be about the Bulls altogether, but it seemed like it was more about just him. So I don't know if that's where it started as him following him around for his last year, or could have been his last year instead of saying it was the last dance. I don't know. I just thought it was really good. I mean, I learned things about him and Pippen and all those guys that I never knew before. Like I said, I wasn't a huge basketball fan, but I did.
All right, let me ask you a question. Them. So time off for a quick second. So you're the perfect person to ask this question. So having, not a huge basketball fan. I mean, you've heard stories. Of course, you know who Michael Jordan is and how good he was. After watching this documentary, what are your feelings about Scottie Pippen?
I think he came across a little soft in some of those games. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought he was a great player with that team, for that team. But, you talk about how he sat out the last game. Well, I'll give him credit for coming back with that back problem. What was that, game 6 or game 7, whatever it was, that one game, when he kept having to go back into the locker room every time? I mean, that took a lot of guts to go back out there the way he was. I mean, I'll give him credit for that. But if he was out because he didn't want to go back for the Kukoc game, it was kind of, I think that was kind of sad. But, I mean, he's supposed to be that great player. But
And you're right. And he did himself no favors. When they interviewed him and he said, I would do it all over again. You're right. But outside of the back issue, which he gutted through and you got to give him a lot of credit for, I don't remember a ton of positive moments with Scottie Pippen in that documentary.
No, there wasn't.
But I think Michael Jordan did give Scottie Pippen credit and talked about how important he was in terms of being a player that complemented what he brought to the table. It's not like Michael Jordan out of his own mouth was constantly bashing Scottie Pippen in his docuseries. I didn't get that. Now, him telling some of the things that Scottie did, were they necessary? Probably not, but he decided to do them anyway. I mean, talking about, that situation where Phil Jackson drew up the last play against the Knicks in that playoff series. I mean, Michael Jordan wasn't even on the team. So, I mean, did he have to touch that? Did he have to visit that? No, he didn't. But he decided to. And, listen, for whatever reason, that was Michael Jordan's choice to make because ultimately he was in control of the content that was going to be released. So if you want to criticize him for it, okay, I get it, but again, this is him telling his story. And Michael Jordan was the draw. It's the reason why everybody paid attention to it. It's the reason why ESPN and Netflix did it with the Chicago Bulls versus doing something on the 80s Pistons or the 80s Celtics or the 80s Lakers.
I need more of these.
Michael Jordan was interesting.
He was, and he still is.
And he still is, but nobody's ever heard Michael Jordan talk about those years, not in this fashion. So to actually get that, I think people were excited about it.
All right, let's stop on a dime here and let's hear Buster Olney. Now, Buster was on with Carlin last night, and we've talked to guests over the coming weeks. It says, guys, once they come back, once one comes back and the teams start to come back in Major League Baseball, they'll all come back. And Buster said he doesn't really believe that. In fact, just the opposite on guys coming back when we do get the resumption of baseball.
It's more than a concern. It's an expectation. And for different reasons. There might be players who, Bryce Harper said, he ain't lying, bro, who look at the financial equation, weight against the risk, and that's the reason why they don't play. We've heard from Mike Trout that if the medical protocol is incredibly restrictive, then that might be a no-go for him because his wife is due to have a baby in August, and that's going to be a priority for him. There are players like Carlos Carrasco, and our Pedro Gomez did a great piece on this on ESPN.com today. This is someone who recovered from leukemia last year. He's going to be more at risk. So the full expectation among teams and among agents that I've spoken with is that there are going to be players who are going to say, no, the conditions for me to play this year are not right.
Which is really interesting because we never really believed that, right? We always were of the thought that once they come back that everyone will get in line and it'll be some kind of internal peer pressure and guys will play. But if you're Carlos Carrasco, you can't come back. You had cancer last year. There's no way you can come back and play baseball. It sounds like there's going to be a decent amount of guys in Major League Baseball that are not willing to risk it and don't come back.
Yeah, you had Mike Trout come out today. I mean, I saw one quote from him. If they don't have, I mean, they have to have, in his mind, testing available every single day for him to feel like he's going to be safe, which is, I mean, that's unrealistic. They're not going to test guys every single day.
No.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, each guy, it's going to depend on your own situation. I mean, you heard from Blake Snell. He wants to get his money. You've heard from Mike Trout. He has concerns about, you know, his well-being and the well-being of his, you know, pregnant wife and their unborn child. You know, what happens when he leaves to go see the birth and comes back? How does that work? You got Carrasco. You saw that in the WWE with Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he chose not to participate because he was at risk. He was at high risk. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, maybe there's some managers or some coaches that are, you know, older coaches that don't necessarily want to take the risk, but it's going to be, you know, some is better than none. I mean, having baseball is going to be better than having no baseball. So if guys choose not to return, then that's going to be their prerogative.
Yeah, and Dave, to your point, I think it's guys in baseball, but it's also guys in other sports, man. I mean, you had J.C. Treader, the president of the NFLPA, come out and say, yeah, there are a lot of NFL players with underlying health conditions that could be at risk, and it's ultimately going to come down to the individual choice from the athlete. Now, the one thing I will say is that with baseball, it feels like guys have more financial security than they do in football. Baseball, you got guaranteed contracts. It feels like they're in a better position to be able to sit out for a year if they feel like it's putting them at unnecessary risk or a risk that they don't deem worth it. So I think this ultimately is going to come down to them being able to work out the money. And right now, it just doesn't feel like the two sides are anywhere close. I mean, you got this article in the Post this morning about the email correspondence between Major League Baseball and representatives from the MLBPA. And again, it's back and forth about the language in the first agreement that they came to on the prorated salaries several weeks back. And Dave, I just feel like both sides are dug in to the point where this could get even uglier than it already is.
Such a bad look for baseball. And I'm not even taking a side. If you don't play baseball because not because of health, but if you don't play baseball because money stands in the way, it's going to be hard for a lot of people to get back.
Which, by the way, has been the biggest misstep in this whole thing. I mean, the owner's leaking the proposal with the 50-50 revenue split, and then Tony Clark responding the way he did, and then Blake Snell and everything else.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think we all realize, like, in any big business, I mean, the finances end up being the most important thing. But you're right. I mean, just the optics of this being about finances, there were 1,000 different things that if the season didn't start that you could have pointed to. If you had kept the finance part, I mean, if you kept that part quiet.
But Rick, they didn't keep it quiet. Baseball didn't want to keep it quiet. The owners benefited from leaking all of this information. And guess what? Tony Clark and the MLBPA and all the other players around baseball took the bait. And they never should have. The owners benefit from vilifying the players. They win in the court of public opinion. People are always going to side with the owners.
I understand that, Chris. But at the end of it, if there's no baseball, no one wins.
You're right. You're right. But we talk about the missteps in this whole thing and the optics of the situation, and it's not good for baseball, and they probably should have kept all of it quiet. My thing is this. The owners didn't want to keep it quiet. They wanted this out there. They're trying to leverage the pandemic to lay the groundwork for a more favorable collective bargaining agreement after 2021. Like, that's what they're doing.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I think that's exactly what they're doing. I just don't know in the grand scheme of things if that was the smartest thing to do. Because if you do, I mean, for the first time, and maybe this could be one of the first times, that you have, you know, the players and the players union, you know, band together, because there are legitimate, like a vast majority of the guys do have serious concerns about the health issues, that they make this the opportunity to take the stand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there'll be outrage, and they won't win in the court of public opinion. But if they choose to, you know, to miss the season, I mean, that's the owners. I mean, as much as they're trying to leverage,
you could do irreparable damage to baseball.
How do you ever rebound?
You're absolutely right, Rick. You're right. The owners are taking a hell of a gamble with this one. This is a huge risk that they're running, and with the players. Association with baseball, I mean, that's the last union you would want to have that kind of risk with. You would want to take that kind of risk with, because they actually might sit out. They actually would.
I don't know how you ever get over it.
Of all of the players' unions, of all of the team sports in this country, The baseball union is the strongest one. And for the baseball owners to choose this time to take this kind of a risk, man, I mean, again, like I just said, you could do irreparable damage to your sport.
I don't even think it's you could. I think it's you would. All right, let's bring him in from Forbes, from the YES Network. Mike Ozanian joins us here on 98.7 ESPN, kind of the behind-the-scenes finances of where we are with sports and Major League Baseball. Mike, we appreciate a couple minutes. The thing, and there's a few things in your article, which is really well done, which jumped off the page for me. First thing is the headline, the coronavirus will cost U.S. sports leagues at least $5 billion. I mean, we're not talking about a small business, and we know that. We're talking about huge, huge amounts of money right now.
That's right. You're talking about largely coming from tickets, luxury suites, stadium signage, parking, all the things that that typically happen in the venue. And you're going to get a smaller portion of national TV and local TV money as well.
Mike, let me ask you a question. I just need some clarification. So, you know, reading through all this stuff, reading your article, trying to keep up to date with everything going on. So Major League Baseball owners have said that, you know, if there is no season, that they'll lose $4 billion. Is that they'll lose the $4 billion or they'll lose $4 billion of the $10.5 billion that they made last year?
You know, I saw the report. I actually have a copy of their report, and I didn't quite understand their accounting. So what I did was I went by my numbers and our annual baseball team valuations and try to reconcile all the finances. And the upshot is, and I'll go through the specifics in a second, is from my perspective, if the owners were to pay the players on a prorated basis for an 82-game schedule, in other words, half their salary, it would not be worth it for the owners to play the season financially. Wow. They would have massive losses. In my view, the 50-50 revenue split, they would probably still have losses, but they would be much smaller and they could sustain them. One of the things I think that's being missed from this is that the owners, many of them, have huge expenses for stadiums and debt related to the stadiums. For instance, the Braves have a new ballpark. The Texas Rangers have a new ballpark. Last year, the Texas Rangers already had what is known as a capital call, which is they asked the partners to put in cash of $100 million because of the cost overruns of the stadium. Now, that's not the player's fault, but that's the reality of the economics. What's also missing, I think, from some people is every year the Yankees have to make an $80 million payment, which comes from their stadium revenue, that go towards the bonds that we use to finance the new Yankee Stadium. The Mets have a similar payment, but it's about $44 million. Again, the owners enjoy the benefits of those new stadiums as well. I get that. But the fact of the matter is those teams still have to make those payments. And here's just a quick breakdown of where I get using my numbers. If you go to 2019 season, total revenues were $10.5 billion. That's gross revenue before the debt payments. Player costs all in for everything, pension, benefit, et cetera, $4.7 billion. All other operating expenses, $3.2 billion. So you got a league-wide operating profit of $1.5 billion. Now, if you're assuming the revenues were the same in 2020, if you then were to pay players on a prorated basis, you're talking about player costs of $3 billion. That's going to leave you only an operating profit of $200 million. You cannot pay those expense, all your other debt payments, your stadium costs, et cetera, and run a season that way. It would be unfathomable. I can't see the owners doing that.
So, Mike, you're saying that it wouldn't be viable for the owners to pay the players on a prorated basis with their salaries, and you're also saying you're talking about the overhead of the teams. I think the owners use a term called economic feasibility in their back and forth with the MLBPA. I guess my question to you is, what would be the threshold for the owners in terms of being able to work out some agreement on what they would pay the players? What would the player costs for 2020 look like if there weren't any fans in the stands?
I can't see, you know, I mean, I'm not that familiar with their counting, but my numbers, I can't see much more than 50%. I'll be flat out honest with you. Where I see the owners going with this, and I think where I think the best chances for the players would be, was, as you guys know, you've talked about it, I'm listening to your show, right, is you got a new CBA, collective bargaining agreement, coming up after next year, right? So they're going to be talking about that real soon. I would maybe buy with a players union. I'd be saying right now, hey, listen, okay, maybe we'll go with this or something very, very close to it, but give us something in the next collective bargaining agreement, you know, whatever that may be, maybe a higher, room under the luxury tax system, maybe some things we can get in the amateur draft or what have you. But I'd be shooting for the next CBA. That would be my option, because I just think the owners, you know, are looking at this and they're saying, you know, we have these other commitments in terms of stadium debt and debt payments and all that kind of stuff. And it's just not something we can afford to do to pay you on a prorated basis, and which would be, I think that's $2.3 billion. If you pay half the revenue, you're talking about cutting player costs instead of being $2.3 billion, you're talking about cutting it down to $1.6 billion. That would be half of the revenue that the owners would take in, based on my estimate. So you're losing a lot of money for the owners, for the players by going to prorated. But as I see it, it's about the only way the economics would work and make it worthwhile for the owners to have a season.
Well, Mike, I guess as a follow-up to that, if the financial concerns are real, if the owners would be operating at a loss if they played games and they paid players their prorated salary, why not be transparent with the players in terms of your records, your accounting, your books? And because we're in an unprecedented situation, why not show the players that it doesn't make sense for them to try to play with empty stadiums unless they can come to a new agreement on salary?
I think that's a very good question and a fair point. I do know they share a lot of numbers. I've seen in instances, I've seen the numbers that they do share. There's a lot. Here's where I think what I think some of the sticking points are, and to your point, is this. It's like, okay, ESPN, and I'm going to make up a number because I don't know exactly what it is. Let's say ESPN is paying $100 million to broadcast baseball this year. Baseball, they will keep that cash, let's say all of it, if it's a full season. But baseball is going to have to give ESPN, you know, the term is make goods in next season and or the season after. So if that number is $20 million or $30 million, whatever the case may be, baseball cannot count that, you know, using generally accepted accounting principles as revenue this season. They cannot, because they just can't do it under proper accounting. So the union is arguing, but you're going to get that cash. So, yes, you can give that to us. But the owners are saying, yeah, but that's going to be coming out of our pocket next year and or the year after effectively anyway. So, you know, we can't count that as cash. So I think that's some of the differences. And I think your point is even greater on the local TV deals, because I don't even think that the owners know exactly how much they're going to be getting on the local deals. It gets very complicated, you know, especially in situations where teams like, let's say, the Yankees, the Mets, the Cubs, the Orioles, the Nationals, where the teams have ownership stakes in those regional sports networks. It gets incredibly complicated. And so on a team-by-team basis, the local media deals, I don't even know, in some cases, the owners know exactly how much money they're going to be getting.
Mike Ozanian joining us here, Forbes and the YES Network. Question for me is, if there's no fans in the stands for any sports, and we have to imagine it's going to be like that for at least the short term, is baseball the biggest loser in that, or is there another sport that's somewhat close to no fans in the stands?
The two worst by far, hockey and certainly Major League Soccer. I mean, Major League Soccer is like 90, 95% stadium revenue. They have tiny TV deals. It's going to be devastating for them. I think I've already heard that there are two Major League Soccer team owners who are looking to get out. And hockey's tough because of the four major sports. Hockey is by far the most gate-centric. And again, it largely comes to the fact that they get the biggest percentage of the revenue from the arena, because relative to the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL, they have the smallest TV deals, both in terms of national deals and cable deals.
Mike, I want to shift gears really quickly. The Kansas State Athletic Director came out and said that the TV revenue that they would get from their college football program is enough to sustain all the other athletic programs. You're hearing and seeing stories about other athletic programs across the country slashing some of the non-revenue producing sports. My question to you is this: is the TV money across college football big enough for most of those schools to keep their athletic programs intact?
In the Big Five, yes. Yeah, it is. I think what they're not saying, though, is that in many cases, a lot of the football and basketball money, it not only goes to the other sports, but it filters into the other other programs, you know, into the music department, into going into the library, into academic scholarships. You know, there are some schools, particularly like Notre Dame comes to mind, you know, their athletic department doesn't even control the revenue that comes in from sports. It goes to, you know, the head of the school. He dictates how it goes. There's a lot of fallout from that, but yes, the short answer to your question is, yeah, absolutely, in most cases. The TV deals for the Big Five conferences and independent like Notre Dame are humongous and are definitely enough to cover those other sports. But again, you know, there's a similarity with college and pro sports. As you guys know, as big followers of college football, even college basketball, a lot of these schools over the last 5 years have built new football stadiums, renovated their football stadiums, built new basketball arenas. So they have a lot of debt in many cases attached to those facilities. So that becomes, if they do not have any sports, the question becomes, how much of that TV money do they get? How are they able to pay off those debts on those new stadiums and arenas? It becomes very challenging. So that's another reason why it would be much better for them to play without fans. At least they get that TV money. They could pay the other sports, pay off the debt on their stadiums and arenas versus not playing at all.
All right, Mike, listen, we really appreciate a couple minutes you trying to clarify what's going on in the big business of professional and collegiate sports. Thanks so much for a couple of moments.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Ozanian, that was good. He's entertaining. He's got a lot of information there. Good stuff.
Yeah, but you hear those numbers. I mean, you know, this will be a bad week probably going back and forth as both sides try to posture and get the best possible deal. But, I mean, these sports need to come back. I mean, yes. What he said, though, in you know, as far as, you know, revenues are concerned, how much from local TV they don't really know. National TV, you know, I'm sure with the playoffs, and again, I guess that's one of the concerns with baseball now is if it does, you know, if the thing does come back and they don't get a full playoffs and the opportunity to crown a champion, how that affects their TV money and everything else. It just, it goes back to, and I get there's money involved in playing with, you know, within your own state. Here's a hypothetical. Let me ask you this question. So you play the entirety of the regular season, mm-hmm. You get into the first round of the playoffs, and
we're talking baseball here.
Yeah, and okay. you still don't have fans in stands. What happens if the Dodgers and the Yankees end up in the World Series? You're going to play a World Series in stadiums with no fans?
I mean, yeah, you might have to.
Well, you might have to, or could you have avoided it? I mean, could you? I mean, with what's going down on, I mean, what's going on in Florida as far as, you know, how much further ahead in the game they are than us with the state being open, right? You got Tom Brady working out. I mean, I got my nephew. He's going, I mean, spring hockey starting, like the whole nine. Like their state is opening up. Like, wouldn't you want to put, I mean, if we're talking about 40% of your revenue, wouldn't you want to put yourself in a spot where you don't have to worry about that if it does come up?
Yes.
Like, if we're still having fans in seats.
But couldn't you always alter that along the way? Like you
But if you know you're going to have to alter, I mean, if you know or you suspect that there's a strong possibility that you're going to have to alter it, because your two best teams, I mean, the Dodgers and the Yankees are playing in states that we can't really see having fans at all, ever. So you're going to have a neutral site World Series if you want fans. Why not just eliminate that? It's safer. And if you have to work something out with your state or whatever it is, because they're putting pressure on you, it just makes more sense.
If you could have fans at games in Florida or Arizona or whatever, and you have empty ballparks in the postseason, especially in New York, L.A., or you know, San Francisco, cities like that, it would be a bad look.
The optics of it wouldn't be great.
Yeah, it'd be a bad look.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm with Rick on this one. If you know that you would probably have to adjust in order to have fans at playoff games anyway, why don't you just start your season that way? And you try to work out the economics of it from state to state and whatever it is. But it just feels like why not try to give yourself the opportunity to have as many fans attending baseball games as you possibly could out of the games that you're going to play in the regular season and postseason.
My dancing has gotten better since we've been quarantined.
Yeah.
How do you know?
My kids tell me. My kids.
And they're very honest, right, with their assessments.
They're objective.
Yeah, my three-year-old, I mean, she's considers herself the boss. I mean, we have dance parties, and she says, Dad, you're doing good, occasionally.
You're doing good. Now, did she say you're doing better, or are you just doing good?
No, she'll, occasionally, I get the look, like, what are you doing? And then when I do good, she kind of gives me, like the heads up. Like, oh, that was good, Dad. I'm like, nice. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Elle.
Now, you say appreciate she thinks that. She's the boss. She's not the boss?
Well, no, I mean, Cassie's clearly the boss, but I was told yesterday that, that when Cassie's not around, if she's, you know, in the house or whatever, that she's the boss and she'll be watching me. That's what she told me.
So she tags in when mom is.
Yeah, exactly.
Not available.
Yeah, as she's sitting on her chair outside with her legs crossed and her sunglasses on, watching me and Milo.
Are you a little fearful of her?
A little bit, yeah. Uh-huh. A little bit.
That makes sense.
I'm more fearful for because it's going to happen, it's bound to happen, that when she does get older, like the battles between her and my wife going back and forth. Like, cause she's already dressing herself and everything else. Like, it's gonna be crazy.
She dresses herself appropriately at three?
She picks out her own clothes, yeah.
Wow.
And God forbid you try to tell her otherwise. God forbid.
Good for her.
How about this? How about this last night? I tell you all these stories. I mean, probably stories I shouldn't tell, but I'm gonna tell
them. No, you should, because I think people are looking for stories to entertain them more now than ever.
So we're putting the kids to bed last night. So we're in the bathroom brushing their teeth. So Cass and the kids go up, and she's going to start brushing their teeth. So I'm downstairs, you know, cleaning whatever I have to clean up so I can go upstairs. So I go upstairs, I go walking into the bathroom, and as I go to step towards the toilet, I slip and then go down, like almost go down on my back, like almost broke my neck. And I'm like, why is the floor wet? Uh-oh. And I look over to my left, and Ella's like, oops, sorry, Dad. She missed the toilet when she sat down because she had to pee so bad, and she peed, some of her pee went on the floor, and I slipped.
So she can dress herself, but she can't use the toilet properly.
No, she can use that for the most part. This was, I think she was just kind of rushing, trying to get her clothes, like getting herself positioned, and then she, yeah, and I slipped in the puddle of pee and fell in the puddle of pee. Ugh. She's like, oops, sorry, Dad. I was like, thanks. Thanks, Elle.
Well, that's not great.
But you can't, I mean, you see her face. I can't be mad. I mean,
right. No, of course. She's 3 years old. Oh, is there anything worse than when you, like, admonish your kids, and then a few minutes later, you're like, what have I done now? Like,
what do you mean, like, too far? Every single time that you admonish your kid, you feel awful afterwards?
I feel guilty. Even when they rightfully deserve it. Like, I'll leave the room, I'll be like, oh, Cheryl, this is awful. Sometimes being a parent is not easy.
No, I'm a mush. You should have seen Cassie. We're having a water gun fight. Like, anytime it's nice out. So Milo got this fancy new super soaker. And then my wife decided also, because for some reason, I guess we just need more water guns, she got them like this backpack that you fill up and there's a water gun attached to it.
Love it. Love
it. So we're having this epic water gun fight. And during the course of this water fight, I mean, the water coming out of the hose is like, it's freezing cold. So finally, I'm like, Milo, can we be done? He's like, no, Dad, we got to have a water fight. So I'm like purposely trying to hide next to Cassie because they're not going to shoot my wife because she'll lose her mind. No, not only did she get hit. So Milo does the right thing and he's not shooting me. Ella, for some reason, out of nowhere, just comes walking up and just click, click, psh, right in my wife's chest. Just this huge stream of water. And my wife jumped right out of her seat and was so mad that she grabbed She grabbed my water gun and she just walked up and she just started peppering Ella with the water gun. My daughter
I like that Cassie doesn't react like a typical parent might, right? Where it's like, you go to your room, I want you to think about what you've done and how that is wrong. She grabs a gun and gets right into battle.
Right, and then trash talked her. Oh, you don't like it, do you? And then just completely like that was it. Like she just, my daughter just was done. Done with it. Threw the water gun on the ground and then went and sulked in the garage for like 20 minutes.
That's great. All right. 98.7 ESPN and Stu Leonards want to thank all the brave and hardworking heroes during this pandemic. Stu Leonards has created a first responders gift box with healthcare workers and first responders in mind. If you know a hero who deserves Stu's favorite treats, send us their story at 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. We'll choose 10 winners this Friday, salute each recipient on air, and send them a Stu's gift box. Again, email 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. Salute. If you'd like to purchase a gift box to send, head to stewsgifts.com. For every first responder gift box they sell, Stews will donate $25 to the American Red Cross. Did you guys happen to see the ESPN.com rankings of the best starting five in each organization in the Eastern Conference?
Are you really asking Canty that question? Honestly, he's probably got it pulled up on his computer right now as we speak.
You're wrong, Rick. You're wrong. I don't have it pulled up on the computer.
Have you seen it?
It's pulled up on my phone.
So it's ready to go.
It's ready to go.
So let's start with the local teams. Have a little fun with this. The Knicks. You know what's sad about the Knicks one? Is outside of Melo, and I guess Melo's deserving of that spot, but outside of Melo, you don't have a Knick in the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's rough.
They haven't been doing a lot of winning, Dave. They've been really bad.
But every time there's a list and it hammers home the fact that the Knicks have just been the laughing stock of the NBA, it's no fun.
No, it's not fun. I mean, there was Carmelo Anthony and before him Patrick Ewing, but that's really all you've had to hang your hat on as a fan. Now, I know there are other guys that are iconic Knicks like John Starks and Anthony Mason, but I mean, in terms of stars, I mean, the Knicks haven't done a great job of drafting and developing talent, so they're not going to have the stars in recent memory that other basketball teams would.
If anything, it hammers home the point how little Patrick Ewing had to play with.
Yeah, they did him no favors, Dave, at all.
Right?
They did him no favors. But, I mean, when you're the number one overall pick, there are going to be expectations attached to it, And listen, it was tough for anybody to break through during that time when you had the Pistons, when you had the Celtics, and then the Lakers in the Western Conference, and then, of course, the emergence of the Bulls in the 90s. You were going to have a talented team, not just a couple of players, and unfortunately, the Knicks couldn't put the pieces around Patrick to take full advantage of what he brought to the table.
It's a shame, because he was such a great player. And I don't think that Patrick Ewing is remembered as this great all-time wonderful player like he should be.
Not after watching that Bulls documentary. He's not. It's unbelievable. It's like they just went out of their way to just poke fun at the Knicks, too. It's like between you guys.
He loved it.
I mean, you got Pippen walking over me. You got the Jordan. I mean, and then it's, oh, just so you guys.
Michael's last game in the Garden, though. And then when Pat Ewing came over to him.
It's just ridiculous. And then just fun little fact, you know, Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan have eliminated the most Hall of Famers. Can you guess who?
Yeah, which one is more? Ewing,
yeah,
right?
Ewing. Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable, man.
And that doesn't even include the collegiate, you know, takedown in 82.
Enough. It's enough. Right? It's too much.
And then somebody tweets me today. By the way, today's the anniversary of Pippen dunking over Ewing and then, you know, standing over him and yelling at him.
Yeah, I didn't love that.
That was
awful. I
did
not love that. Yeah, that was bad.
So in looking at these teams, Chris, and we can even take a break, let you peruse a little more, and Rick as well, what do you think is the best team in the Eastern Conference? Western Conference comes out tomorrow, but let's do that. We'll take a break. The best team, if you're playing a best of five or best of seven series, best overall starting five of a team out there. I mean, Celtics.
This 76ers team is damn good.
I'm just looking at that team.
This 76ers team is damn good.
Wilt,
AI, Dr. J, Barkley, yeah. And Wilt.
And Hal Greer, that is something. And the Celtics, too.
Yeah,
Moses
Malone can't make the top five, that's pretty goddamn.
The
pretty,
Celtics have Hall of Famers that are not on their first
team. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Noon, we've got segments. Segments. Cuddle, marry, trash. Nobservations. Your calls. So busy noon hour. All right, looking at the list on ESPN.com. The best starting fives for these Eastern Conference teams. So you look at, I mean, anything jump off the page to you? Like the best teams? You mentioned the Sixers, Chris. Celtics have to be right there,
right? How
about
the Bucks? I mean, have you seen the Bucks starting five?
Let me go to the Bucks.
You got Oscar Robertson.
I looked at the Hornets. I was not too excited.
You got Sidney Moncrief. You got Ray Allen. You got the Greek Freak. And you got Kareem at center.
And Oscar Robertson.
I just said that, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear Robertson. Okay. Yeah,
yeah, but I don't know. The Bucks didn't have prime Kareem. Kareem's prime was out there in L.A., man.
No, they had the better Kareem. They had the original Kareem.
Well, I mean, he was the original. That was where he went. But, Dave, I don't know. I guess maybe it's just because that's how I remember it. I'm a Lakers fan growing up, and that was what it was. I remember Kareem as much more as a Laker than I do as a Buck.
Well, yeah, just because of our age. I don't remember him as a Buck at all.
Yeah.
But he was unbelievable with the Bucks. Dominant. Could you imagine Kareem and Giannis?
I mean, he's dominant with the Lakers, too.
Kareem and Giannis as your front court? And this, I like. You know what I like that this does? It has him go into three-guard lineup. Oscar, Sidney, and Ray Allen. You have an issue with Carmelo on the Knicks starting five?
No. No, I don't.
No Bernard King? No Dave DeBuscher?
I mean, but you look at that. I mean, just look at, again, we didn't get the best of Melo. I mean, Melo was damn good, but we didn't get the best of Melo. I mean, that was pretty damn good, man. You're talking about one of the better scorers in the NBA with Melo. How about Orlando Magic?
He could always score.
How about Orlando? Penny, Nick Anderson, Tracy McGrady, Dwight Howard, and Shaq.
And they hadn't even been around that long.
Penny Hardaway was good, man.
He was
really good.
Whew.
He was good. And so was Dwight Howard. Like, we don't even remember Dwight Howard as this great player. But he was great with Orlando.
No, he was, Dave. But, I mean, when you're not able to break through and win championships, that makes it hard to be considered in that conversation when you talk about the all-time great big men.
I don't know. If we're going these teams with all these guys, for the sake of looking at this, that we're getting the best of each player on the starting five?
I think that's fair, yeah.
Well, I think I would have to choose Milwaukee, I think, maybe.
Milwaukee?
I think I might pick the Bucks.
How about the Celtics? So Cousy, Havlicek, Paul Pierce, Larry Bird, and Bill Russell. You have Hall of Famers that didn't make their starting five. Yeah. What are the Lakers?
You don't want to know the Lakers, Dave. That's why they didn't do the Western Conference.
I'm going to write this down right now. No, they're doing the Western tomorrow.
I can tell you, nobody's going to beat what the Lakers could have trotted out there.
I would agree with that 100%, but here's the question. Who's left off the Lakers that's going to bother you? So does Kareem go on two teams?
Kareem would be, to me, Kareem, you have to be able to claim him as a Laker.
Does Wilt go on two teams?
I guess he could. I guess he absolutely could.
You have LeBron on two teams. You got Shaq on, you have Shaq on multiple teams. So, yeah.
You could, but I mean, what the Lakers have, Dave, I mean, if I were putting together the team, Magic would be my point guard. Jerry would be my two guard. Kobe would be the three. Kareem, and then whoever you want to pick for your center.
So you could not put Shaq on the Lakers?
I mean, you could choose. You got Shaq. You got Wilt. You got Mikan. You got Elgin Baylor, James Worth. I mean, there's so many other guys that were all-time great players in the NBA that played for the Lakers. I couldn't imagine that there would be another team that could put together a better combination in the starting five than the Lakers.
I agree.
Yeah. Couldn't see it.
That their second team could beat a lot of first teams.
Yeah.
Celtics would be up there as well. And it makes sense. Those are the two storied programs in the history of the NBA.
Yeah. But I think the Lakers would have the best starting five.
And this is probably the second best five as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with what they can
do. And we could claim LeBron too, right?
Yeah, but do you really consider LeBron a Laker?
I mean, Dave, you know I'm a Lakers fan. I don't, although I am going to enjoy the championship. Whenever the season resumes or you have the playoffs, LeBron's going to win a championship as a Laker. So whenever that happens, I'm going to enjoy it. But LeBron doesn't feel like one of the all-time great Lakers. You know what I mean? Like, if for some reason LeBron would win enough where they would put his jersey in the rafters, it wouldn't feel like it belongs with the other ones. Does that make sense?
Of course, because he's only been there for a year and a half.
And he's in the twilight of his career as well, even though he's still the best basketball player on the planet.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.